Mini episode 435 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number 1stdownscouting.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everyone. I want to welcome you today to the FDH Lounge. We have a very special conversation. Longtime umpire Al Clark and author of Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. We have him here today, actually on location at the Cleveland Sheraton, catching him while he's in town. So a pleasure to be able to sit down with him, discuss his book, his career, his life. Al, welcome to the program. Good to be talking to you today, sir.
Rick, it's a pleasure to be here in Cleveland. It's a pleasure to be with you. I am one of the guys that have always loved to come to Cleveland.
Exactly. We talked a little bit about that off-air as well, and there's a lot to see here and a lot to know about this city, and you were on the circuit for many, many years while you were an American League umpire, of course, and at the tail end of your career as a quote-unquote major league umpire once they merged them. And I guess we'll talk about that subsequently, but in terms of, I wanted to lead off with the thought process here. After you left MLB, after you went through some of your subsequent issues that you had to deal with, your thought process on writing the book, I'm curious about that. We talked a little bit off air about Marty Appel being instrumental in helping to make it happen, but how exactly did you go through the journey of deciding to document this and put it out there for the public?
Rick, that's a great question, and the reason that I did it was this. After I got done with the legal stuff that I became involved with, I had the opportunity to sit back, literally sit back, and think about my career in an unclustered type way. And when I did, I realized that I was really eyewitness to a lot of iconic stuff that happened in Major League Baseball during the 26 years that I spent in the major leagues. And I thought, you know, people might want to, baseball fans might want to learn about all these iconic things, the Earthquake World Series, the Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's record, the one-game American League East playoff game in 1978, the Yankees and the Red Sox, the Bucky Dent game. Mm-hmm. And as I, you know, uncluttered these things in my mind, I started to put them down on paper, and I thought baseball fans might like this an awful lot through an ump's eye view. And I got together with Marty Appel, as you said, and unfortunately, I wanted to write it with Marty, he being a great baseball book author. He was involved in another project. He put me and a fellow by the name of Dan Schlossberg in touch with each other. Dan had written 35 previous baseball books. He thought the project would be a very good baseball project. As it turned out, it certainly was. One thing Dan wanted was that he did not want to write the book. He wanted it to be a conversation type book, like you were sitting in my kitchen or on my deck in my backyard and me telling stories. And I think we accomplished that very, very well. And it's a good book. And well, we like I say, we did it because, geez, I had a lot to share. Mm-hmm. And what makes the book different is not only stuff in baseball through an ump's eye view, but also I was very, very honest, very, very upfront about, you know, in baseball parlance, it's I was given my release. In everyday parlance, I was fired. Mm-hmm. And I was fired for a reason, regardless of the reason and how drastic it was or how not drastic it was, I was fired. And then a couple of years later, I did something else. I authenticated some pieces of memorabilia, too many of them. I accept full responsibility for it, totally. I paid a price. I paid a very high price. And in hopes that if I was as honest as I was, the book would be a different kind of baseball book and perhaps a learning experience for some folks also.
Absolutely. And for anybody that reads the book, I think you'll see that it served those purposes. And I think it's very clear that people can certainly get that from the book. There's no question about it. You actually anticipated my next question as far as some of the moments that you were privy to seeing. The next question I had beyond that would be, you had mentioned Cal Ripken Jr., and of course, he being on the cover, there's the picture of you ejecting him from a game, and that was one of the things that was interesting about the book. Anybody can eject Dick Williams, Billy Martin, or Earl Weaver. You're the guy that ejected Cal Ripken Jr., one of just a few, I guess, so that makes for an interesting part of the read as well.
Well, Rick, I was one of only three people to eject Cal in his entire Hall of Fame career, and this is complete conjecture on my part. First of all, let me explain the cover of the book. It is me ejecting Cal in mid-ejection form as an umpire, but that wasn't the reason for the cover of the book. The fact that Cal is there is just happenstance. Mm-hmm. The fact that it is a picture of an umpire, me, doing what an umpire does best, with a tremendous amount of passion, with a tremendous amount of authority, with a tremendous amount of being in control. That's what the picture is all about. The fact that Cal is there is just happenstance. Now, the reason that Cal was ejected, it was a hot, hot Sunday afternoon in Baltimore. The streak was still in effect. Cal had not broken the streak yet. The Orioles were on their way to a 3.5-hour airplane ride to Dallas right after the game. It was early in the ball game. Cal's back had reportedly been hurting some, and he took a third strike that was a good third strike. I called him out. He took exception, and he knew exactly what to say to whom to get the desired effect. He was ejected. He got an extra two and a half hours to have his back worked on before a 3.5-hour ride to Dallas, and the streak was still intact.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is, and again, Cal Ripken being the very classy guy that he is, I'm not going to lump him in here. You had mentioned in the book that there were some people that would sometimes go anti-Semitic with you with comments, and I'm sure Cal didn't do that. But you have a very interesting part of the book about that and about your experience in baseball, other Hebrew figures in the game as well. You mentioned Sean Green, and that always brings to mind with a number of people the whole thing a little bit later in his career about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and it's always sort of occurred to me that of the games that of the religions that ask you to make a compromise in baseball, it seems like Judaism is probably way up there because of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, observation of the Sabbath. So how did you deal with that going through baseball with some of the demands that you had to do with your job versus being able to observe your religion?
Rick, that's a great question, and not very many people have even broached that subject. Quite honestly, as a young umpire working through the minor leagues, you've got to make some decisions. And my name was not Sandy Koufax. Mm-hmm. You know, I could not literally stay in baseball, move through the minor leagues and to the big leagues by making demands such as that. When I got to the big leagues and I earned my way to the big leagues, it just wasn't right for me personally, mm-hmm. to ask the American League at the time to have off every Friday night or to even take off during the High Holy Days, mm-hmm. because they were usually after the season and in September or October. And that was during the playoffs in the World Series. And like I say, I wasn't Sandy Koufax, and I wasn't willing to, in today's world, make that sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So I did not. But that doesn't, I mean, Sean Green was a great player in our game during my era. Koufax was a little bit before, but I know Sandy and I know Sean very, very well, and I admire them for what they did. Mm-hmm. Sean didn't do it early in his career as he became a superstar in our game. He felt more comfortable doing so, and good for him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just didn't do it. I never did it. As you say, there were some anti-Semitic moments that I endured, and they were brand new to me. I never, ever, not one time, experienced any anti-Semitism while in the big leagues. Okay. But in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. there were a couple of instances, one with Denny McClain that I outlined very succinctly in the book. Mm-hmm. He and a fellow by the name of Ray Bussey, who had a cup of coffee in the big leagues with the Cardinals, I believe, they attacked me and my partner after a ball game in Indianapolis in the minor leagues in the American Association. They were dealt with by the then American Association president, the late Joe Ryan, swiftly They were suspended that night, as a matter of fact, and the next day a career minor league manager by the name of Joe Sparks he came to home plate, we exchanged lineup cards, and he couldn't have been more apologetic and saying things that made me feel good, that there's nothing, you know, like that. There's nothing, our game does not do that. Mm-hmm. And it's as good as you can be. And I guess Stan Musial said it first, and in this conversation, it epitomizes it. The only race is the race to first base.
Yep.
The only color is white for the home team and gray for the visitors. Mm-hmm. And the only creed is the rule book. And that's what we live by in baseball, and I'm proud to have been a part of that for 26 years and 30 years all told.
Well, it is great that such things like that were the exception to the rule and that experiences were positive on the whole. That is good to know, and you do get that kind of sense going through the book. You had mentioned in the book when you were talking about the landscape of the game with your career, the late 70s through the beginning of the 21st century, one of the best hitters of that time, obviously Tony Gwynn, he being in the news unfortunately recently for his sad and premature passing. Again, I know that you were an American League umpire as opposed to an MLB umpire almost all the way through your career, but do you have any memories of interactions with him or anything like that from your time in the game?
Yeah, of course I do, Rick. You can't be in the big leagues for 26 years and not run into Tony Gwynn, whether it be in the in All-Star games that he was a part of, the two that I was a part of, in San Francisco and in Arlington, Texas, or in you know, wintertime dinners. We spoke together a couple of times at dinners and celebrity-type golf tournaments. Tony was obviously a first-class guy, one of the three best hitters I ever saw in the game, the others being Rod Carew and Wade Boggs. Mm-hmm. But in any one year, the best hitter that I ever saw was the year that George Brett from the Kansas City Royals flirted with 400, and I think he ended at somewhere between 388 and 392.
Mm-hmm.
But what a year he had. But Tony Gwynn, my goodness gracious, a Hall of Famer in so many ways, not just talent, but as a person also.
Absolutely, yes. One of my favorite players of all time, and one of my mother's as well. And so, just really kind of took it personally when it happened. It was a sad thing. I didn't realize his health was as bad as that. I think a lot of people didn't as well. But it's a big loss for the game of baseball. You mentioned towards the outset, when you were talking about the thought process of writing the book and leveraging some of the circumstances that came out of it, in terms of everything that you went through after baseball, immediately thereafter with your time of confinement, it's easy to read the book and see some of the positives that came out of that, the umpiring clinic that you got to do for people in there. You mentioned the weight loss, and that's something I've heard from other people as well, that with nothing to do, you're going to walk a lot, you're going to get in better shape. So did you come to regard it subsequently as sort of a chance for character building and a chance to get through it? Did you get the sense that the entire experience may have been a positive or just isolated positives amidst what was kind of a negative thing to have happen to you?
You know, Rick, you're pretty good. That's another subject that's very, very seldom broached in an interview that I've done, in any interview that I've done. I did a tremendous amount of learning during my time of incarceration. I was only incarcerated for 120 days, but during that time, I learned an awful lot about patience. I learned that time means nothing while your freedom is taken away. Time does neither go quickly nor go slowly. It just goes. I learned that idle hours can be a huge psychological enemy. If you don't occupy your time with reading or writing or expanding your mind, you are going to become so stagnant, your attitude is going to become terrible, your psychological effect of depression is going to take over, and my goodness, you're going to have a very, very difficult time. For me, I my personality is that I try to turn a negative into a positive, and I was able to do that through, as you said, I went to the warden and asked if I could run an officials course in hopes that some of the guys, when they did serve their time and be released, mm-hmm. they would go back to their communities and create and provide something positive for themselves and their communities by becoming a sports official.
Mm-hmm.
And we had about a four-week session in the classroom, or a so-called classroom, where we had skull sessions and we went over the rule book. We went out on a basketball court after that for a couple of weeks, and I showed positioning and how to make calls. And then onto a baseball and softball stadium, softball field. And I literally went over how to call balls and strikes, safes and outs, fairs and fouls, and positioning. Mm-hmm. Now, I have no idea what happened to any of these fellas. However, I know that 35 or 40 people partook in the experience, in the class, and they started it, they finished it, they enjoyed it, and my hope is that they went back to their communities and added something positive mm-hmm. after being such a negative force therein.
Well, you would think the odds are pretty good that at least a couple of them did, sure, and that that would be nice to be able to have as part of your legacy. But another thing I wanted to ask you about as well, in the latter part of the book, you're getting into kind of your observations on the game of baseball and how things have gone over the course of the last 10, 15 years. It's very interesting as we start to wind down the tenure of the man who was commissioner towards the tail end of your umpiring, Bud Selig. You've got a lot of legacy issues involved there in terms of, we talked about it a little bit, the merging of the umpire crews, interleague play coming in. There are a lot of traditionalists, kind of like myself, who grew up on the game when you were umpiring, who look at it almost more like the leagues are sort of like conferences in other sports now, that if you didn't have the DH, how much difference would there even be between the American League and the National League? And I know from talking to a lot of people, the initials MLB were never on our at the tip of our tongues when we were growing up, and now it's not American League, National League, it's MLB. So when you look at this and when you look at the way that the game has changed from that period of time, do you tend to think that there's more good than bad, or is it kind of complicated to you? How do you see things shaking out with all of those changes and the ways that in some aspects you wouldn't even recognize the game from that standpoint?
Rick, I'm a traditionalist also, but with that in mind, I understand the progress that's needed to keep the game fresh. I think that Bud Selig has both been good and bad for the game. Bad because I think he was more of an owner's commissioner rather than an owner's and a player's and a fan's commissioner. Good because I think that some of the things that he initiated and came in under his tutelage, so to speak, are very good. The expansion of the playoffs, I think, adds a tremendous amount of interest in a lot of cities all over the country. And interest means more cities are going to be involved at the tail end of baseball because everybody's got a chance to win, or a whole lot more people have a chance to win, and winning creates fandomship, mm-hmm. if you will. And it keeps football off the pages of the sports section, mm-hmm. you know, primarily for a couple of more weeks. I think that one of the big things where I'm involved, or I'd like to think I was involved, is the invent of instant replay mm-hmm. For umpires in baseball. I've got a little different take on it than perhaps others. I think that where it's going is great for the game, mm-hmm. great for the umpires. I think it's going to create a situation where the caliber of Major League umpires is going to be better and bigger than it's ever been before, and here's why. I think that with the high-definition television and technology, that the older, more senior, respected umpires are going to embrace the system. I mean, it's coming, there's no mm-hmm. doubt.
Yes.
And when they do, and as they do, I believe that the level of concentration of umpires, those guys on the field, is, if possible, going to be higher, bigger, and better than even before. I think the younger guys are going to see the older fellows embrace this, mm-hmm. and they're going to get on board. Hence, I think umpiring is going to get bigger, better than ever before. Mm-hmm. I am definitely not of one of the attitude of one of these guys saying that during the era that I worked, the genre of my brothers, that we were the best ever. Mm-hmm. I think the progress is going to continue. I think we were good, without doubt. But I think that these guys are going to get better. Just like the players have gotten bigger and better and stronger, and not because of the PEDs and steroids, I think just because of the training and the equipment and the ballparks, etc., I think the umpires are going to be better. And with more money coming in the umpires' way, perhaps it's going to attract a bigger, better type of person. Mm-hmm. And the personalities are going to be better. I'm very proud of the time that I spent as an umpire, mm-hmm. But I think that these guys are going to be bigger and better than my era was.
Well, that's very interesting, and they're certainly dealing with a different landscape today. One of the things that struck me as well reading the book, you talk about, and again, people do have to realize that this is the case, the isolation of the road. You're traveling in a crew of four. You're not allowed to fraternize with the players. You have whatever contacts and friends in the different cities. But I wonder to whatever extent, if you think it might be different these days with social media, with technology, you can always do FaceTime chats or Skyping with the people at home or communicate that way. The modes of communication are different and so much easier and more convenient these days. Do you think it might make the road a little bit less lonely today?
I think to some extent it does. With Skyping, you know, you can see your family every day and that kind of thing. I think it's so different, the social media, the news, the information, the 24-hour news cycle. When I went to the big leagues in 1976, there was still a game of the week, you know, on NBC. And as my time evolved in the big leagues from 1976 on, more and more games, more and more networks became involved. We used to watch Sports Center every night to see who was on it and what went on around the country. But now, I mean, right out of your telephone, you can see what's going on instantaneously everywhere. The way that we prepare for a game, umpires prepare for a game every day, is we get into the dressing room and we don't necessarily talk about what is going on in the game that we're going to work or what went on yesterday in the game that we worked. But now we talk about what's going on all over the country. And by being in tune with baseball as it's going on instantly, we are psychologically preparing ourselves to work that day's Major League Baseball game. And I think that in itself adds to the preparation of Major League umpires and Major League umpires being more in tune and being able to do a better job than perhaps ever before.
Very interesting. Hell yeah, it makes you more aware of the entire landscape as opposed to just where you are day to day. I guess that would be a huge difference as well. I know that presently you're out promoting this great book, Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. We always like to give our guests a chance to plug here on the program, so I'm sure that you've got quite the book tour going, and of course that's why you're in town. What are some other things that you'd like to make the people aware of right now?
Oh, I think that the major thing, Rick, is the fact that there are so many baseball books out there, but this is different because it gives the reader, the baseball fan, a totally different perspective of stories and situations that happen on the field because it's written and told through an ump's eye view. And if you're a baseball fan and you love the game as I do, as I have my entire life, gee whiz, what could be better than having your fandomship expanded to the game that you absolutely love, the best game that's ever been invented?
Absolutely. And for any big fans of the game, they're going to want to check this book out. And again, really appreciate the chance to get to talk to you today, Al. All the best to you on your tour. Thank you all, everybody, for listening to the program today.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.